Hey everyone, what's going on? Welcome to a brand new edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast on the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions. And right now I'm going to be bringing you the latest and greatest going on around the world of Hollywood. Hope everyone has had a wonderful week so far. A lot of stuff that I want to get into on the podcast today before getting into the weekend. I'm going to get into the first trailer that dropped earlier this week for the second season of Loki. I'm also going to be getting into some news regarding a potential Wonder Woman 3 with Gal Gadot. I'm also beginning to talk about some new headway being made in the Scream 7 film. Also giving you a preview on what to look out for this weekend in the world of movies and a whole lot more. But the first thing that I do want to talk about is something that did happen earlier this week. And it was some very sad and unfortunate news. And it was the announcement of the passing of one of the true great up-and-coming actors of, I think, the generation in Angus Cloud, who, if you haven't heard that name, he is the actor who played Fez on Euphoria, which is a huge, huge, huge hit on HBO, which had its second season air last year in 2022, became this big phenomenon also in 2019 for season one, and really was a kind of spinning off point for a lot of people within the industry when you talk about young up-and-coming talent such as Jacob Elordi, Sydney Sweeney, even though Zendaya is big now. One of the big reasons for that, I think, is because of the platform that she had with Euphoria in showing a range of talent that I don't think anybody saw before within her. And so it was really kind of bringing up these great up-and-coming actors within the industry that a lot of people were looking forward to, and one of those people were and was Angus Cloud, who had some great films that was in the works. But you could just see, even from his performance as Fez, even though it was a supporting role, every time he was on the screen, he was just somebody that just made an immediate impact and was somebody that pulled you into the scene and was really a highlight for both seasons of Euphoria. And it's just a shame to hear what happened to him, the reason surrounding his potential, or the potential reason surrounding his death. And so it's just very sad and tragic to see a great youthful talent gone way too soon. And it's just a shame, and my hearts and the podcast's hearts go out to the friends and family of Angus Cloud, who passed away too early at the age of 25. And now to get on to some of the other news that is going on in Hollywood. The first thing that I want to talk about is centering on something that broke when this podcast, or when the last podcast debuted last Friday, but I wasn't able to get to it. It broke kind of later in the evening time. And that was kind of the first big domino effect related to, I think, the actors and writer strike that is going on right now. Really the actor strike. And one of the big things surrounding, of course, the SAG strike that is going on right now is the fact that no actors can work right now, both in promoting films that are ready for release, in filming anything that is in production right now, or even getting any projects off the ground that might be ready for production. All those films are shut down. And one of the other big fears in regards to the industry right now is because you might not have your actors to promote a film, there is some growing fear within the industry that some of these films that are already set to come out later this year in 2023 alone could be pushed back to 2024. And I talked about it on the last episode that there has been growing fear within just one studio alone in Warner Brothers that they could be looking to move some of their bigger films set to come out in the fall season, such as The Color Purple and Doom Part 2. Well, a studio has done the inevitable and decided to kind of rework their slate for late 2023 and also 2024. So we're going to kind of lay out all the details that surrounded the dates, and a lot of kind of dominoes fell that very much felt reminiscent of what happened during the COVID-19 pandemic, where all these studios for multiple months and multiple years were kind of playing the chess release date game of finding out when the best time to put their films out, and it had ramifications that is still kind of setting in today's day and age, in today's year, even stuff that happened in 2020 and 2021, and now that it isn't the pandemic, but it is very much the next fearful thing that is happening right now in the industry, which is, of course, the writer's strike and the Screen Actors Guild strike right now. And again, it's a lot of unfortunate stuff, but again, I think because of the causes of what's happening with the strike right now, the things need to happen. And of course, these unions are striking because they feel like they're not getting paid enough. They're not being represented enough within the overall business, and they want to see changes. And that's their right. And the contracts are up, and that's what they're striking for in their new contracts. And that's where we are right now. And unfortunately for us as audiences, we just have to wait and wait. And there's still some really good content that's out there, but unfortunately, some of these things are going to have to be moved. But there are some good things, I think, to come out of this, and some of the things that are good is that there are some dates that were completely unannounced that Sony also made with some of the moves out of 2023 into 2024. And some of those first announced dates that came out were for some pretty big films that I think are going to be big players next year. And the first one that I think is pretty huge is the announcement from Sony that they have officially announced a release date for the next Bad Boys installment, in which it'll be coming out around Father's Day, specifically June 14th of next year. And it'll be playing alongside films such as Inside Out 2, which was the first film, huge hit for Disney and Pixar back in 2015. And when you look at the Bad Boys franchise, When the third Bad Boys film came out, Bad Boys for Life, in early 2020, before COVID, before the pandemic, any of this stuff, social distancing, mask wearing, the shutdowns, Bad Boys for Life really got 2020 off to an incredible start. And it was amazing to kind of see this phoenix rise from the ashes in the Bad Boys franchise, because I remember the third film being in kind of production hell for a very, very long time. And then, of course, you have the directing duo that did Bad Boys for Life really, I think, deliver a really good film that delivered on what makes, I think, the Bad Boys franchise a hit from the previous two films that were directed by Michael Bay. So it made sense that Bad Boys 4 was going to be in the works after the success of number 3. And I think putting it in the summer movie slate is a perfect time period, especially after seeing what the third film was able to do on Martin Luther King Jr. weekend in January of 2020. To put it in the summer movie season, I think that fits the feel and the nature of the Bad Boys franchise even more so. Putting it around Father's Day is just adding to the perfection in the fact that this franchise is very much a male-oriented franchise, very much male-dominated. The demographics are going to go to that. I think sons are going to want to take their fathers. Fathers are going to want to take their sons and their families, male or female, to go see this movie. And I think that it is going to have some potential really good success there. And I think it'll also act as really good counter-programming for maybe some of the teenagers, younger adults, again, older audiences that want to go see Bad Boys 4. Again, Inside Out 2, very much more family-oriented. So I definitely think those two can act as kind of a yin and yang in the June 14, 2024 slot. And who knows, maybe it could be the Inside Boys phenomenon that happens within that weekend. Although, again, not saying that nothing can replicate what Barbenheimer is doing right now, but I'm sure people will be looking to see what that next thing could be. And not saying that it's going to be the June 14th weekend, but Father's Day weekend, these two films, complete different opposites. I think that could be a really good recipe for some big box office successes. Two major franchises both duking it out on that weekend. Another good news addition to the Sony slate, also coming in the summer of 2024, July 12th to be more specific, is the third installment in the Venom franchise, which the last two films combined have made over $1 billion at the box office. Venom: Let There Be Carnage, the sequel, was actually one of the rare diamonds in the rough, I think, especially when it came out in 2021 during the kind of second, third peak of the COVID-19 pandemic. It did really well for itself in October of 2021 before the lead up, of course, to Spider-Man No Way Home. And I think there's just something about this franchise, especially within this, what Sony's trying to do right now in live action that's non-Spider-Verse related, is trying to build up these kind of villains within the Spider-Man rogues gallery and having them do their own films. And while something like Morbius didn't do well, and I don't know how Kraven's going to do, or Madame Web is going to do, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But for Venom, there's just something about it, whether it's the popularity of the Venom character itself or the way that Tom Hardy has played this character of Eddie Brock and Venom. There's just something about it that has done really, really well. And so I'm curious to see that Sony clearly has the confidence in this film to move it away from its success month, where both 1 and 2 have come out in October, to now move it to the summer movie season, specifically in the July quarter of 2024, which, again, to me, July is usually where studios will put the films that they think will do really good business, because it, obviously you've seen with Barbie and Oppenheimer, but other films that have done in the past, such as the Dark Knight films, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, there are films that I feel like studios put their more reliable films that will do well in that summer month, because you have kids that are out of school, they're in camp, you have families that could want to go to the movies, people that might just want to go to the movies in general, that might be taking their vacations, not going to work. So there's a lot of great circumstances surrounding the month of July that I think really does work for studios, and they put their best foot forward within that month. So clearly Sony feels confident that they are willing to put Venom 3 away from a lucrative month that has worked for them to a couple months up in the corridor of July. So we'll see how that goes. And then another one that is moving into some more the bad news now, I guess, per se, is, or really kind of the other good news thing that came out of this, is that instead of coming out on February 16th of 2024, Madame Web will be moving up to February 14th. So either way you slice it, then another live-action Spider-Man member within his comic book universe will be getting their own film, starring Dakota Johnson, Sydney Sweeney, Isabella Merced, directed by S.J. Clarkson, who worked on the Jessica Jones TV series for Netflix. That will be coming within the Valentine's Day corridor, and I haven't heard anything about this film, so maybe it fits along the themes of that weekend. We all know that February can turn into a lucrative month if you put a film in there that people want to go see. Clearly, the big iconic February film over the last maybe 10 years has been specifically the first Deadpool movie, and so we'll see how Madame Web is able to do, but I don't know how it's going to do. I haven't seen a trailer yet. I've seen some of the pictures, but that's pretty much it. And then to kind of go into the sad news per se in terms of some of these films that will be coming out a little bit later, the first one that I want to get into is coming out later, but it's still coming out in the immediate present, specifically this month, and that is Gran Turismo, which instead of coming out on August 11th, will be coming out on August 25th. So instead of the middle of August, it'll be coming out right at the end of the summer season, before Labor Day weekend, which is when we get Equalizer 3 and some of these other films. But the reasoning for this is that Sony, instead of just having the film come out in wide release on August 11th, is going to be doing special screenings for the film in the 2 weekends leading up to its new wide release date of August 11th and August 18th. And the reason for doing this is what a Sony spokesperson said, quote, is that since the stars can't promote the film, the audience is going to do that. And I think right now, I think for a lot of people that are working within marketing, PR for a studio, they're going to have to get creative for how to promote a movie, especially something that is immediate, where you don't have the choice of delaying your film because you've already sunk in your marketing campaign for the film. And even if you had things that were already kind of filmed in promotion for the film pre-strike by actors, you're not going to want to delay a film from coming out and just add more money. You might as well just kind of think outside the box and come up with ways of kind of trying to promote it without your cast to do it for you, whether it's a director or in some other way, shape, or form. And I think for Sony right now, Gran Turismo, this is the way they're going to do it. They're going to let the audience speak for the movie. And I got to say, this is one of those films where when you hear some of the early critics' reactions to the film, it sounds like it could be a potential surprise late hit of the summer season, one that I'm always looking for when it comes to the August month of any summer movie season. And right now we have a couple of films that I'll talk about a little bit later that could be along those lines as well. But Gran Turismo was getting some really, really positive buzz early on in its initial screenings. And so I think they're just trying to get audiences to see this film and get that positive word of mouth going. Now, the thing is, you don't want to make sure that these fans are the only ones that'll go to these films and they're going to see because it could be a free screening and they might not show up again to see it when it's actually out. So you're not getting those box office dollars. And we've seen that happen over the summer movie season, specifically The Flash is a huge example of that, where they had audience screenings for that film, and that was a big piece of the marketing campaign, and a big piece for Warner Brothers in promoting that film. And this was pre-strike, before the Screen Actors went on the picket lines, and I think it did not work to their liking, as the film was pretty much a bomb at the box office, one of the biggest bombs in Hollywood history, really. And I don't think Gran Turismo is going to do that, but you want to make sure that people still go see this movie when it actually comes out on August 25th. So hopefully when they do these audience screenings, they're only in a couple of markets here and there, and they're only a screening or two during the week, so that you can get people to actually see this film when it comes out on August 25th. Another, probably the biggest change within the calendar up for Sony is Kraven the Hunter, which is one that I'm actually really looking forward to, and I don't know how it's going to do financially, but I really enjoyed the trailer. I'm excited about this film. And it was supposed to come out August 6th of this year, but instead, Sony, who wants a full press rollout for this film featuring Aaron Taylor Johnson, and since they don't know when the strike is going to end, they don't know when it'll be feasible for them to promote this film, they want the full package, they've decided to, instead of delaying it a month, half a year into maybe the spring months, they're deciding to basically move this movie a whole year plus into the 2024 slate. So instead of coming out on August 6, 2023, it'll now be coming out on October 6th of this year. It'll be moving to August 30th of 2024. So this is a drastic change for this film, and it's already had its teaser trailer basically come out, nothing else, and it had a big presentation at CinemaCon earlier this year. They're basically decided to say, you know what, before we go any further with this marketing campaign, let's hold our cards and push it a little bit farther so we can have the full rollout that we want for this movie. And I can understand Sony wanting to do that. I think they're hoping for this film to do really well. And I think, minus the Venom films, again, talking about Morbius, that was not a good result for them when it comes to these kind of spin-off characters that they're looking to establish within their own kind of Spider-Man universe. And if Kraven doesn't hit, I don't know what they're going to do after Madam Web comes out, really. Are they going to continue doing this if something like Kraven doesn't really hit for them? And the only two hits that have come out in terms of live action are those two Venom films. Is it just Venom that works? So I think Sony wants to make sure that Kraven has everything that it needs to at least play itself in the best, it put itself in the best position forward for it to have possible success down the road. So instead of coming out on October 6th of this year, it'll be coming out on August 30th of 2024. And as of right now, on October 6th right now, the only film that is set to come out is the release of Killers of the Flower Moon on the big screen, which of course is directed by the great Martin Scorsese. So nothing is in the way of that film coming out right now that could challenge it for some potential box office success. Then another film that was set to come out this year, which doesn't really surprise me that this film moved, because even if there was no strikes whatsoever, I don't know how this film is going to be able to come out and do a marketing campaign within 4 to 5 months, and that is the sequel to the surprise hit of 2021, which came out in November, and that is Ghostbusters Afterlife. And it'll be moving from December 20th of this year to March 29th of 2024, so it'll be coming out on Easter weekend, and it'll be going up against the follow-up from the one and only Academy Award winner Bong Joon-ho in Mickey 17, which also stars Batman himself and Robert Pattinson. And so those two movies going up against each other, completely different films, but I do think they could maybe again complement each other in creating a market for audiences to see both of these films at the same time as well. So we'll see where this goes, but I like the fact that I think Ghostbusters moving to Easter weekend helps it. I think that could maybe get some family members to go see the film as well alongside the holiday weekend, whether it's on the Easter weekend or afterwards. I think that could set itself up for really good success, especially in the month of April in 2024. Then some other films that were kind of moved off. I think another big one that was moved completely off the calendar, but especially after you heard the comments after the release of Across the Spider-Verse, it made total sense that this film was completely taken off of its March 24th, 2024 release date. And that, of course, was Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse. It sounds like they still have a lot of work to do on the animation side. It sounds like none of the cast members did any voice recordings whatsoever. So on top of not doing anything pre-strike, now that we're in the strike right now, there's no way that this film is going to be ready to come out in March of next year. And the fact that it doesn't even sound like the animation is completely done yet either, if they've even really truly started making this film and putting it really together. So I think we're still a few years away before we get the conclusion of the story in Beyond the Spider-Verse, but I would rather them take their time in making this film, because clearly between Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse from 2018 to 2023, we had a number of years in between both of those films, and look at the results that we got in Across the Spider-Verse. I think it paid off very well in spades, both critically and commercially for the film. So as long as they take their time with that film, I think it will pay off in dividends for them no matter what. Even though we still got to wait a little bit longer to see the conclusion of the story, as audience members, you'd rather them see them take their time and put in the best work they possibly can with that film. Another film that didn't surprise me moving off the release date, since it doesn't sound like they even have a director, let alone a full cast, and that is this Karate Kid reboot that Sony is doing. It's moving off of its June 7, 2024 release to December 13th of 2024. And I wouldn't be shocked unless there's major headway made in the next couple months or whenever the strike ends, if they have already had their cast and they just haven't announced it yet, of when this film actually happens. I wouldn't be shocked if it moves further down the pipeline, because again, there was no headway made with this after it was initially announced that Sony was making the Karate Kid reboot in the wake of the massive success that is on Netflix in Cobra Kai, which is basically, if you want to watch a sequel to the Karate Kid or all the Karate Kid films with Ralph Macchio, Cobra Kai is that show and that story right now. So I'm very curious to see what this other Karate Kid film is going to be, but we'll see if it actually does come out in 2024 or if it gets delayed even further after the strike, if there are still no cast members or even director announced for this film right now. And then another film that was completely undated was the Blumhouse film They Listen. So that was a huge slate that Sony just decided to completely rework. But I think, again, it's no surprise that studios are going to be doing this, and Sony usually is one of the first ones to respond to this. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Disney follow suit, Warner Brothers, Universal follow suit as well, especially if this thing drags out for a lot longer in the next couple of months. But what do you guys think about these moves in regards to the Sony movie calendar release dates? Which one are you most bummed to see or even excited in the wake of films just announcing their release dates, like Bad Boys 4 or Venom 3? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. Now to move on to some comic book movie news that I want to get into. And the first thing that I want to talk about is for a trailer that actually, I think, for a show that a lot of people are excited about. And even though the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kind of in a rut right now, even given the success of a film like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, you look at Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, you look at what the results have been for Secret Invasion, both creatively, critically, and commercially, I don't think the ratings are really there. Whatever the numbers are that Disney is looking at, doesn't seem like they're there. But one show that I think has really made an impact in the MCU and is a big win for the MCU, for Marvel Studios, for Disney, Disney Plus, was season one of Loki when that came out in 2021. It was coming off of the huge wave that was WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Loki really, I think, went 3 for 3 in the initial run of these Disney Plus shows. And Loki really made headway and changed a lot of things that we look at with Disney Plus, for better or for worse. First off, it had a huge opening premiere week when it debuted back in 2021. And then also, it made the kind of shift of what we see nowadays, where instead of Disney Plus shows, which initially, when the first season of The Mandalorian was coming out, even the second season as well, those were Friday staples for those shows to come out with new episodes. But with Loki, they saw the positive response of what Loki did in that first weekend when it premiered, And they decided to basically shutter the strategy of coming out with things on Friday and moving it completely to the Wednesday slot. And since then, we have gotten, instead of Friday debuts of new episodes, we have gotten Wednesday debut of episodes. Now, whether that actually works or doesn't work, and Loki was just a lightning bottle, a lightning rod, or you only struck twice with the lightning on that one, it remains to be seen. But Loki season one was a huge success, and I think it laid the groundwork really well, actually, for the kind of multiversal storyline that the MCU really wanted to get the ground running with. And Loki was really kind of introducing us to the concept of the multiverse, and it left us off with a really big cliffhanger where we wanted to know more about the adventures of Loki, and especially getting answers on some of the questions that, even though they answered some things in the initial mysteries of season one, there were still a lot of questions going into the universe, the characters, some of the reveals that happened, especially in that finale, that warranted very much a second season. And I was really excited about this. I remember, if you've seen the post-credit scene for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, it was really a scene taken from Loki season two, and it looked really good. I'm excited that Tom Hiddleston really has become a staple within Marvel, and that he is kind of leading his own TV show right now, and that Loki very much, even though he is still a villain, he's become more of an anti-hero over the last couple of years, and I like where they're taking that character right now. And seeing this trailer, it just seems like everything that worked for the first season is very much working. It seems like, at least initially in this trailer, is working once again. We get the return of not just Tom Hiddleston, but we get the return of Owen Wilson, we get the return of Gugu Mbatha-Raw, of all these amazing characters that we saw in the first season, along with some great new additions. The big one, I think, highlighted in this trailer is the addition of Academy Award winner, recent Academy Award winner for Best Supporting Actor for Everything Everywhere All at Once, in Ke-Huy Quan. And it seems like what he was able to utilize in his character in Everything Everywhere seems like it's translating to the style and aesthetic and the tone that Loki is in. And I love the interaction that he and Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston have together. And so I'm really excited to see what his character is going to bring to the table. Even given all the legality issues that Jonathan Majors is facing right now, we still get a shot or two of him as another kind of Kang variant in this trailer, and he very much has this presence around him in the trailer as well. So they're not hiding away from the fact that, yes, before all this illegal stuff did happen, Jonathan Majors did shoot scenes and episodes for Loki season two, and I don't think they're going to shy away from that. They're just going to go with it, roll with it, and see where it takes them. And I think, given the fact that this trailer just gives you the good old feels of what a really good MCU show could do, it showcased in the views as it was announced after the trailer debuted that it is the biggest Disney Plus trailer to debut with 80+ million views. And I think it also warrants kind of the question of what this season is able to do, and I think showcase what people really want to see in Marvel moving forward. Now, is it that maybe Loki season one was riding the wave of recent success with Marvel, and the fact that WandaVision was a huge phenomenon and Falcon the Winter Soldier was a really solid addition to the MCU post-Endgame, but now that we've kind of gone through multiple projects that have kind of felt media core, is Loki season two going to feel that way now? Is it not? Is it going to be able to rise above it and showcase that people are still interested, but they're only interested in certain aspects and there are certain things that they will go for in the MCU nowadays. They won't go for every single thing now. So I'm really curious to see how Loki season two really does do. Does it do better than season one? Does it do exactly the same? If it does the same as Loki season one, could you consider that a success given where Marvel is right now and showcase that, again, people want to see Marvel stuff, but they'll only see stuff that showcases characters that they're already attuned with, or that they really like the world that was introduced and they want to see more of it, and this is the stuff that they want to see in the MCU moving forward. So We'll see what happens, but I really do like this trailer. It comes out on October 6th, so it is the next thing to come out in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, post-Guardians, post-Secret Invasion. So before we get the Marvels, the next thing that we are getting is this second season of Loki. What did you guys think of the trailer? Let me know what you thought about it in the comment section. And then the other bit of comic book news that I want to talk about is one that really kind of, I think, brought up really good conversations and questions throughout this week, and it was the comments made by Wonder Woman herself in Gal Gadot. And of course, if you follow anything, not just within the comic book movie news world or just within the world of DC, there's been a couple shakeups throughout the last couple months within the DC universe. First off, of course, is the fact that we have a brand new Superman and Lois Lane in David Corn-Sweat and Rachel Brosnahan. The old era of the DCU is done, and now we're going to be getting the DCU, which is going to be run by James Gunn and Peter Safran. And before they get to their new era, they still gotta kind of take some of the licks that were left by the old era, specifically Shazam Fury of the Gods, The Flash, very much have been box office bombs for Warner Brothers and DC so far in 2023. And they still have two more films to get through, the new up-and-coming one, which is coming out in a couple weeks in Blue Beetle, and then, of course, later in the year, specifically in December, with Aquaman and The Lost Kingdom, before we truly start to see, I think, the formulation of James Gunn's view, his creativity and vision within the DC world. But one of the things that it seems like might not be going away anytime soon, as it would seem like we would be getting a full reboot with basically new characters in these iconic roles. Of course, seeing that Henry Cavill is no longer Superman, we have a new Superman and David Corn-Sweat. That given that Wonder Woman 3 is not moving forward with Patty Jenkins and sounded like it wasn't moving forward with Gal Gadot, in the future we might be getting a brand new Wonder Woman. Well, according to Gal Gadot, that might not be the case, as she was on the press tour pre-SAG strike talking about her brand new film Heart of Stone with Netflix. And when she stopped by with comicbook.com and given the name of the website, it would stand to think that giving that interview, you would probably ask questions about Wonder Woman and the future of that character, especially again, Patty Jenkins no longer working on Wonder Woman 3. The future is kind of in flux for DC overall. Is the new era moving forward? Is the old era mixing in with the new era? What's going to happen? And instead of kind of making things clearer, I think Gal Gadot actually made things even more confusing than somehow they already were. And this is what she had to say in regards to the future of her playing Wonder Woman and a Wonder Woman 3. I love portraying Wonder Woman, Gadot says. It's so close to and dear to my heart. From what I heard from James and from Peter is we're going to develop a Wonder Woman 3 together. And again, this is Wonder Woman talking, or Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman herself, talking to comicbook.com in relation to her brand new film, Heart of Stone, which is coming out later this month on Netflix. And when I heard this news, I think like a lot of other people, again, it left me very confused for the future of DC. And again, I think Gal Gadot is a fine actress. I think outside of Wonder Woman, she's been very hit or miss. But with Wonder Woman, especially I think with what Patty Jenkins was able to cook up with her, was magic. And I think that they, especially with the first Wonder Woman film, they delivered on an exceptionally amazing film period overall in 2017. Wonder Woman 1984, I know it has its lovers and haters, and it's very much an in-between kind of film. I tend to lean more towards the negative side of things, but it was a swing and a miss, and it just didn't work out. And with this new era, it made sense that with someone like like James Gunn coming in and Peter Safran right behind him as the new heads of DC, they would want to create something new and go in their own direction. So when it was reported that Patty Jenkins was kind of let go and they didn't want to go forward with their script, and it sounded like the end of Gal Gadot's tenure as Wonder Woman was near, it made sense that, okay, if we're going to be getting these new iterations of characters like Superman, like Batman, and that Cavill and Affleck were no longer playing them, minus this kind of Elseworlds thing that Matt Reeves is doing with his own Batman universe with Robert Pattinson, that we were going to be getting basically a whole new Batman, Superman, and would stand to reason, Wonder Woman. And so with this news, it just leaves everything more and more confusing by the day. And I don't think these latest films like The Flash have really helped clarify anything for where we're going going in this direction. So I think the big question with these comments that you can ask yourself is that if this Wonder Woman 3 were to go through and it didn't have Patty Jenkins, but it still had Gal Gadot, would this be a smart move, or would the smarter move just being overall, okay, listen, we're hard rebooting this thing as best as we possibly can, new actors for the Trinity cast overall in Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, and we're just going to go with a different cast and a different perception of these characters. I think that's the way to go, because I think, especially if you do Wonder Woman 3 and it's not Patty Jenkins and Gal, I mean, listen, I'm sure Gal can work with any director and they can make some great things with it, or it might not work out, but I feel like there was a chemistry, an understanding with the character and the director and what Patty was looking for Gal. And even though Gal, and even though Patty didn't cast Gal as Wonder Woman, it was Zack Snyder who did it, I think she took the project and the assignment and ran with it. And I think especially in that first film, Gal gave probably the performance of her career up to this point right now, even all these years later. And so I think for someone else to come in and direct it and do something different, but also make it new and fresh, but also keeping the same person involved, I just think it's going to add more confusion than guarantees at this point. And I think right now within just comic book films overall, people are confused. I think people are confused by the whole multiversal argument, which is I think why people in Marvel are very much fatigued by it right now. I think that with DC, people just are done with it. I don't think they're interested in the movies that are coming out right now. And if you know that there's new films and there's a new era on the horizon and these films aren't from those creators, then what's the point? What's the interest in it? And so I just think right now people are kind of lull a little bit on comic books. And I do think right now there is a comic book fatigue right now within the genre. Not saying that it's going away anytime soon, that it's dead. It can still be a lucrative business. And given what Spider-Man has done, what Guardians has done in the summer movie season, showcases that there can still be success within the franchise and within the genre itself. But again, I just think that it's a smarter move to go forth with a new Wonder Woman, wipe the slate clean. Gal Gadot had her time. She did an amazing job, I think, in both performances, really, even though I think her performance is much stronger in the first Wonder Woman film she did than Wonder Woman 1984. I still think she did a very, very good job, made her a huge international superstar. Everyone knows her name now, and I think she can move on to other things, and I think Wonder Woman should be played by someone else. And I think whether she does become Wonder Woman or maybe she is a producer on the new era of Wonder Woman, I think would be good just to keep her around, especially to maybe mentor whoever could potentially take over the Wonder Woman film, really. I think that would be the way to go. But if we actually do get another Wonder Woman, would be interesting, and we'll see what happens. But this just adds more questions than definitive answers. I think at this point, I think especially for DC right now, you need more answers. And I just think with all the films and everything, even with the new regime, it's just more and more and more questions than answers. And I think people get tired of it. And if you don't give them answers, they're going to say, you know what? Well, then fine. I'm just going to check out and I'm going to go somewhere else to have my investment. So I think there better be answers coming from this era sooner rather than later at this point, even though they've only been in the job for less than a year. And this isn't their regime that is going through the release calendar right now and is going through theaters at this point. You still got to be able to come out with something and do something with this. And we'll see if they're able to do that, whether it's with Gal Gadot or not, for the Wonder Woman film. And then the last little bit of news that I wanted to get into, and this should have kind of been at the top of the podcast, but I'll get into it right now. Completely forgot about it. Was some of the big rumors that actually came out yesterday in regards to the Fantastic Four. And according to the Hot Mic via John Rocha and Jeff Snyder specifically, he is reporting that some of the Fantastic Four, which is, I think, in terms of the MCU, the next big era of the MCU is going to come with the X-Men and Fantastic Four, which is why I think it is taking so long for Fantastic Four to get off the ground. And it's very much on the ground now because of the writers and actors strike. So the script can't really be finished up and the actors can't really get anything done at this point because they're on strike. But it seems like whether it's pre-strike, whether it's through the agents of the actors who are still very much working, they can still get offers. And then maybe when the strike is over, the agents contact the actors with these deals. And so while not the whole Fantastic Four, it seems like, has been cast or given a definitive announcement, we at least seem like to have our Invisible Woman, and particularly maybe potentially our Johnny Storm. And when it comes to the Invisible Woman, which according to a lot of reports that I've read, and it seems like it could be true given where it's kind of all coming from and the credibility of all of them, it seems like while it is very much going to be an ensemble piece, you have the Fantastic Four, the first family of Marvel, it seems like Fantastic Four is going to very much actually be a film that is driven from Susan Storm, from the Invisible Woman. She's going to be really kind of the essential lead of the movie, and apparently the person taking on that role is none other than Vanessa Kirby herself, but potentially playing Sue Storm. And if you know the work of Vanessa Kirby, she's been in the Mission Impossible films, she was in The Crown, she was in Hobbs and Shaw playing the sister of Jason Statham's character, and so she very much has a resume within the field of action. She's also an Oscar nominee for her lead performance in Pieces of a Woman, and she was phenomenal in that film, and she just has so much incredible range. Again, she can do action, she can do drama, she can do comedy, I feel like, if she wants to as well. She definitely has a humor to her that plays out, I think, especially in some of the Mission Impossible films as well. And so I do think that she could really pull this off, and I'm very, very excited for her. Another one that is a little bit more uncertain, but I could very much see and I think would be a great hire and choice actually, would be Joseph Quinn, who of course made his name in Stranger Things season 4 last year is Eddie Munson, a kind of spoiler alert one and done character that is still very much iconic. And Joseph Quinn is kind of this new star on the rise. He's going to be in the new spinoff for A Quiet Place, which is coming out as of right now for next year alongside Lupita Nyong'o. And if this is the case, this will be, even for Stranger Things, this role, if he does play Johnny Storm, would be the biggest thing he's ever been in. And what I really like about this potential casting news, and it's also been rumored and reported that they're looking for an overweight white male to play the Thing, and that apparently Mr. Fantastic is wide open to, in terms of who could potentially play him. There's not one specific person or people that are nailed down for that role right now. But what I really like about this potential casting for the Fantastic Four, if this does turn out to be true, is when you look at Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn potentially, some of these other people that are involved, you're not going for the big mega star. And one of the things that I think made Marvel so great, especially in the early days, was making these great discoveries about themselves. I think it was the fact that even though he was kind of big before, but very much fell off the map, and then Iron Man rejuvenated him, was Robert Downey Jr. Jon Favreau was basically the one that took a chance on him. It worked out in spades for both Marvel, for Robert, for the franchise as a whole, and we see the superstar that is Robert Downey Jr. nowadays. Chris Evans, Captain America, was somebody who I think if you were in the movie sphere, you knew of Chris Evans, but I think he became a bigger name once he took on the role of Captain America. Same thing with Chris Hemsworth. Nobody knew who Chris Hemsworth was before he played Thor, and now everyone knows who he is. Tom Hiddleston. Tom Hiddleston is a huge star. None of these guys are, well, maybe Downey and Evans, Chris Evans are, but not all these people are A-listers, but they're people that you know that are stars. They're on the level of maybe, say, Leo or Brad Pitt, but they're people that you know that are huge stars nowadays. Tom Hiddleston is one of those. Scarlett Johansson. People knew who Scarlett Johansson was, but you know who Scarlett Johansson is nowadays. So Chris Pratt is another one. The list goes on and on for what Marvel, I think, was able to do for a lot of these A-list stars nowadays, these movie stars right now. And I think over the last couple of years, they've kind of gone away from that. They've signed some more of these big name personalities that I think were icing on the cake for the MCU, but they weren't the main dish of these characters. They were people that you can see and look inside and be like, these people could work. These people could work. And then you fill that out with some of these legendary stars like Samuel L. Jackson, Robert Redford, Natalie Portman, Anthony Hopkins. The list I could go on and on and on. Josh Brolin. You could fill out with some of these bigger names that really could work within the MCU, but they aren't your main force. And so I think for Fantastic Four right now, again, people might know who Vanessa Kirby is. People, I think, would definitely know who Joseph Quinn is because he was on something like Stranger Things, but some people might not know who he is. And whoever they cast as Mr. Fantastic in The Thing, maybe they're names that you might know, but they're not like that person that I definitely know. I've seen him in other things. And so I think casting potentially someone like Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn works, and then you're not having huge cost in paying a lot of these people big money in playing these characters and playing these roles. So I think this works in the favor of the MCU. I think this is them kind of going back to their roots. And I think the reason why this casting search is taking so long is they need to get this right, because in terms of where this could go, this could be the future of Marvel. And I think Kevin Feige and the studio knows that once they acquired the rights from these characters who were over at 20th Century, they know the failures, especially that Fantastic Four has gone through. They can't do that again, because it's really three strikes and you're out, really. And I think for Marvel, even though they're on shaky ground right now, you would think that they can turn something that was even lackluster to something very good. And I think that's where the pressure comes from right now. And I think if this film was coming off the heels of Endgame or No Way Home, there wouldn't be this much pressure. But since there's been kind of this lull in between something like Endgame and No Way Home or Guardians now, I think there's going to be some more pressure on this, on the X-Men, to come through and carry the MCU moving forward. So we'll see where it goes, but I really do like the potential casting hires for this film if they do turn out to be true. And I think it'll be very interesting to see where the rest of the casting goes from here. So what do you guys think about the potential casting news for Fantastic Four? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And the final bit of movie news that I want to get into before talking about the weekend preview is moving away from the comic book genre to the horror genre. And if you're me or if you followed this podcast over the last year or two, one of the bigger franchises that I've actually turned into a huge fan of over the last couple years, and I've loved what they've done to kind of reinvigorate the franchise, is the Scream one. What has kind of happened between Scream 5 and Scream 6, I really have enjoyed the new iterations of characters along mixed with legacy characters and what they've been able to kind of do with those two films. And of course, a big part of that is the team over at Radio Silence. And of course, those two guys, along with what they did with Ready or Not a couple years before doing the fifth Scream film, was exciting. And there were two, and that group were big names in the horror genre that were really doing some fun, enjoyable things. And their work, their talent, their charisma, their artistry, what they do worked within the world of Scream, kind of mixing in fun, enjoyable laughs alongside some gory, intense horror at the same time as well. And they were able to blend all that together. Well, unfortunately, the guys from Radio Silence will not be doing the next Scream film, which reportedly is in the works right now, which makes a ton of sense, especially coming off of the success of the sixth Scream film, which is the highest grossing in the franchise right now with $168 million worldwide at the box office, and it came out earlier this year in March. And unfortunately for Radio Silence, while they're working on a brand new project right now, it is kind of this, it's been labeled as kind of a secret Universal monster film, and it's starring Melissa Barrera. Also actually involved in the cast is a late Angus Cloud as well, along with a few others in that cast. So while they'll be working on that film, it makes sense that Paramount, who owns the Scream property right now, wants to probably strike while the iron is hot and make another film. And unfortunately for Radio Silence, when you're directors of projects, unfortunately you're not like cast members and actors where you go into a film and you only work on it for a certain amount of time, and then the next time you probably hear about it is either when you're doing post work on it, reshoots, ADR, or you get ready for the premiere to see the final product. You're kind of done with the film after a certain set of time, really. And you can go on to do other projects within a year, within multiple years. For directors, they stay with movies for years and years until they move on to something else. They might do some things on the side, especially if they're writer directors and Radio Silence guys. They can do multiple things, but they can do certain things that maybe are things that are in the wings, but they can't go from one project while the other one is in pre-production, or while another one is in post-production and the other one could be getting ready to shoot. You can't do that. You got to keep your eye on the ball until a film is done, until it's locked, wrapped, and ready to go to theaters and so forth. And for Paramount, it makes sense that they didn't want to wait. They wanted to get this done right now, probably push for either 2024 release, 2025, given what's going to happen with the strike. I don't know if the script's done yet or not. And of course, the actor strike is going on right now, so you don't know when this film could come out, but I wouldn't be shocked if this thing is probably going to do 2024, 2025 at the latest. And because Radio Silence is gone, they've decided to move in another direction for the Scream franchise. And it's one that I actually really do like. It comes in the form of Christopher Landon. And if you haven't heard that name, basically the resume that he has is he's worked a lot with the Blumhouse film production, specifically working on the two Happy Death Day films and the film Freaky, which I think would have done really, really well if it hadn't come out during the pandemic. And I think if it came out pre-pandemic, or if there was no pandemic when it came out, it would have done really, really well. And if it was a film that starred Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton, and it basically mixed in the body switching film type with the gory insaneness that comes with a horror film. And Christopher Landon, if you watch the Happy Death Day films and Freaky, they mix in that kind of chaotic but fun, intense, gory horror film. And honestly, when you're talking about all those things within the concept of what Christopher Landon has done in those films, it honestly kind of sounds like you're talking about a Scream film, because Scream can be light with comedy but intense with horror and have some laughs alongside of it as well. And it's not this kind of brooding, dark, intensifying, scary thriller. It's got some things that I think anybody can be excited about, and I think for Christopher Landon, he fits that profile that could work very well within the Scream franchise. And I think the thing about this Scream film moving forward is that because the other two films have had success with Radio Silence, how is somebody else going to kind of take what they've done with these two films and continue that moving forward while also adding their own twist to it? And I think you couldn't have gotten somebody better than this guy who, again, with his films that he's done within the horror genre, kind of fits that mold a little bit. And I think this can actually turn out to be a really good hire by Paramount to take the Scream films moving forward. Now, whether he does multiple ones or not, we'll see how this film does. But the next big question, of course, is going to be what's going to happen with the cast and also with the script, because it sounds like the script might be moving forward. Pre-strike, it might have been in the works. So now that we're in the strike, how far along was it before pencils went down? And also for the actors, what are their contracts going to look like, specifically to the top end of the talent? I think Mason Gooding will be back. Jasmine Savoy Brown will be back. Some of the other cast members, I'm sure they'll bring on some new ones as well. But the two big build stars, I wouldn't be surprised if Courtney Cox come back. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if Neve Campbell comes back, depending on what the script does with Sydney Prescott. But she's another one that, depending on what happens, would she be back? But also with their two leading ladies, what's going to happen? Specifically, Melissa Barrera, because right now, we're in the strike right now, and depending what happens and how far along the Radio Silence guys were on their monster film, it seems like she's the leading lady for that film as well. How far along into production are they on that movie? And would she be able to come back for this film, or would they wait for those cast members to come back? And also, Jenna Ortega is the big question for this one, because with Scream 5 and Scream 6, they were really done before she became this huge A-list star, which was driven by the success of Wednesday on Netflix, which came out in October of 2022, and she had already shot Scream 6 at that point, and Scream 5 was already a big success, so you didn't have to really worry about a payday for Jenna Ortega. And I'm sure when Paramount goes around again asking for the availability of its cast, and they're going to want to bring back Jenna Ortega because she brings a fan base to go see these films. So if you already have the Scream fans, you already have the horror fans, you can add another fan base to see this movie. But the big question is going to be, what's the payday going to look like for Jenna Ortega? And is Paramount going to be willing to go that route, because clearly they weren't willing to go that route with their main final girl and Neve Campbell, whether it was going to be a minor role, a big role, and it doesn't matter. It's Neve Campbell is, other than Ghostface, she was the face of this franchise. And so with Jenna Ortega, are you going to be willing to go a huge payday route for her or not? So I think that's going to be the big question with the cast. But just overall, I think when we look at the director, I think if you're looking to move off of the guys that made this a revitalized success in 5 and 6 of the Scream franchise, I think you could not have gotten a better person to take on that role of director that fits the mold of what the Scream franchise is. And again, both mixing horror and comedy in the way that it does. So we'll see how this film is able to do, but I really do like the hire of the new director in the wings with Christopher Landon. What do you guys think of this new announcement? Let me know what you think down below and leave your thoughts. And the final thing that I want to talk about on the podcast today is, of course, the weekend preview, something that I love to do always towards the end of the week, giving you guys the lowdown on everything that you should be checking out in the world of movies. And this week, of course, begins the kickoff to the final leg of the summer movie season, as we are officially in the month of August. And I always, again, like to say about the month of August, it's one where you can find kind of the diamonds of the rough in the summer movie season, and really the year in general. You find kind of these films that you didn't expect to be really good that could not really turn out to be major successes. And I think this weekend might actually have some of those films in the wings. The first one, of course, is one that came out earlier this week on August 2nd. And that, of course, was the brand new animated film, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, which has Jeff Rowe as writer-director. It is produced by Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, who also had a run at the screenplay. And it has a incredible voice talent that includes the likes of John Cena, Rose Byrne, Jackie Chan, Ice Cube, Natasha Demetro, Ayo Aberdy, Giancarlo Esposito, Post Malone, Paul Rudd, Maya Rudolph, and the Teenage Mutant Turtles themselves, Micah Abbey, Shaman Brown Jr., Hannibal Buress, and much, much more, and Nicholas Cantu as well. And so this is a film that I've really liked the trailers that have come out. I wasn't a big fan of the first trailer, but the second trailer actually got me on board for this film. And the reviews for this one have actually been surprisingly amazing. It's got around like a 94% as of right now on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think one of the big things, again, when it comes to the summer movie season, when we talk about it, is the success of animation, especially with kind of existing IPs. When you look at the Spider-Man franchise, of course, with Across the Spider-Verse, that's one of the biggest hits of the summer season, and before Barbie and Oppenheimer, and really kind of alongside Guardians, Across the Spider-Verse is probably the biggest success story of the summer movie season, minus Volume 3 of Guardians of the Galaxy. But again, Barbie and Oppenheimer came along and kind of blew the doors off of that, but it's still a huge success. And I think what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles does is incredible as well, and it showcases how you can perform new miracles on existing IP. Obviously with Spider-Man, with the animation, the new characters that they introduce, it seems like that Paramount is doing the same thing with this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film, where these guys have an idea that they want to take these turtles with. And they're doing something different within the animation, within the story. It's voiced by actual teenagers this time for the Ninja Turtles themselves. It puts the teenage in teenager, or the teenager in teenage, whichever way you want to put that phrase. And so I just think that this could really be a big success. I think for family members that maybe went to go see Barbie or didn't go see Elemental, have been looking for something to see with their kids and their families again to kind of close out the summer season, I think Teenage Mutant Turtles might be that film that surprises a lot of people and becomes one of the big successes, not just of the summer, but potentially of the year as of right now. So that's one to keep your eyes out for if you're looking for something new to see and you already kind of got the Barbenheimer phenomenon out of your system already. If you want to see something new, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles might be that film. Some of the other ones that are on the list to definitely check out, of course, the Meg 2 The Trench is coming out, and that of course is a sequel to kind of the surprise mid-level success of The Meg, which came out in 2018. That one starred Jason Statham, and this time Jason Statham also returns alongside Cliff Curtis as well, along with Wu Jing and Paige Kennedy and some of the other ones that are introduced into this film as well. And while the reviews have not been kind for this film, I'm very curious to see what the box office results are going to be, because clearly this film is directed towards not just the U.S. box office, but clearly the China market as well. So I'm very curious to see where this film lands, because very much so, China has not been kind to the North American movie market over really the last couple of years. It wasn't as strong as it used to be. So I'm very curious with this one, very much starring big movie stars from the Chinese market, how this film does alongside someone like a Jason Statham. So could this one also be not just a big success here in the States, but one of those worldwide films that does very well, especially given that it's a follow-up to a film that had very big success back in 2018? Or is this one a few years too late? We'll find out. But if you're looking for a film just to kind of have ridiculous sharks come at you and blood and gore and guts, it seems like this could be the film for you to check out if you want to go see it. If you want to go see a film that is more on the indie side and is coming in terms of a directorial debut, that could be this new film called Shortcomings, which is the directorial debut of Randall Park. And basically, Shortcomings is the story of basically this kind of couple, these two people that are friends. They're just trying to navigate through life, and it's very much kind of this comedy drama that has some, not big names, but names that you might know. Justin Min, if you were a fan of Joyride from last month, Sherry Cola is back in the scene, Debbie Ryan, Jacob Boughton, Timothy Simmons. So there's some people in the cast that you might know, but if you're looking for something a little bit smaller to go see, a little bit more of a human story than going to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Sharks Attack, Shortcomings might be the film for you as well. And then there's some other kind of smaller films that might be coming out around your area. Dreaming Wild with Casey Affleck and Zooey Deschanel. You also have The Passenger, which is coming out on MGM+. So those are the films that I would definitely recommend checking out to see this weekend. If you've already seen Barbie Oppenheimer, or if you've seen Indiana Jones or Joyride or Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, then if you want to see some of these other films, these are some new ones for you to check out this weekend. And with that down and out of the way, with the weekend preview, that will do it for this edition of the Sam Bissell Podcast. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out my channel for more content. You can check me out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, SoundCloud, and much more. Also, make sure to tune in on to the Ambiguous Podcast Solutions, and be sure to check out the other amazing shows that are on here, such as You Mad Bro, the number one source to see what the internet is pissed off about on a weekly basis. Also, make sure to check out Goal Driven Professionals, geared toward improving client relations, return on investment, and customer acquisition costs for independent businesses and services. Also, make sure to check out The Daily Grind, a weekly motivational podcast with Kelly Johnson, giving you everyday tips and key takeaways on reaching your goals. Also, along the way, make sure to check out these other amazing shows on the Podcast Solutions, such as Wrestle Addict Radio, WrestleMania Podcast, and Midnight Showing. You can check these out and so much more on the website, ambiguouspodcastsolutions.com, also on Facebook and X at Real Ambiguous. And if you want to check me out on Kennedy Treehouse, you can find me on with the coupon Ambiguous. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to follow me on social media. You can find me on X at Bissell Samuel. That's BUSSELLSAMUEL. And also on Facebook at Sam Bissell. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful weekend. And until next time, keep on screening.